This is Fred Churchill of TechTarget.com. I'm joined today by Arun Gupta, Vice President of Developer Relations at Couchbase. Arun is going to be speaking at this year's Java 1 conference in San Francisco, covering topics such as microservices, containers, and Java development. Today, Arun is going to be giving us a little preview of what we can expect at this year's Java 1, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about microservices and containers. Arun is also an avid runner, and we're going to pick his brain a little bit about what he believes is the relationship between long-distance running and the application development process. Arun, thank you for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me here.
Of course. Now, what do you want attendees and listeners to your presentations to take away from Java 1 this year?
Yeah, well, this is sort of a pivotal year for Java 1. You know, JDK 8 was released a couple of years ago. The cloud is becoming a lot more prevalent as part of the every developer's development deployment scenario. There's been a lot of fire recently on that, hey, Oracle does not care about Java. But, all along, if you see, Oracle has really invested a lot more in Java in the recent years. So I think to me, Java 1 is nothing less than a party, and it's a complete geekgasm of developers. All the best of the best Java developers come in there. You hear the latest about the Java, not the language necessarily only, but the full Java platform. So how all these different cool technologies are evolving on top of Java. We have a brand new track that I was leading, and that track was about microservices, DevOps, containers. Now, how these technologies, the bleeding edge technologies, are very, very relevant in the Java ecosystem. So I think it's going to be just like any other year. It's going to be a lot more excitement. Hopefully, we'll get to hear more about JDK 9 modularity as well this year. See how that's coming along. Hopefully, more about Java EE 8. What's happening on that side of the front. And some cool announcements. I think that's what I'm looking forward to Java 1, and that's what typically all developers look forward to Java 1.
Now, you're giving a presentation on refactoring Java EE applications with microservices and containers. Why do you think organizations should be paying attention to technologies like microservices and application container technology?
Yeah. Now, we have been building monolithic applications for many, many years, and they have worked really well for everybody. But with the way digital economy is transforming, the way you want your app to be pervasive, available, aware, you want it to be accessible, always on, those are the kind of terminology which is really driving the digital business these days. And that's sort of one of the problems that microservices is trying to solve. So for example, SOA was introduced many years ago. It tried to solve that problem. It got jaded by vendors by jamming their ESBs and heavyweight SOAP protocols, etc. in there. Microservices exactly tries to do SOA in the right way. I think that's one of the big differences. It's really about lightweight. First of all, it's an architectural style, very heavily driven by open source. it's very roll your own stack. There is no one vendor which says, hey, we have a microservices product. Hopefully, I've seen some vendors saying we are microservices, this is our microservices product. I think that's a misnomer right there itself. It's very, very open source centric. And in that sense, containers are really leveraging that microservices aspect really well. There's a lot of similarity between the two. For example, microservices, you take a monolithic application, you split it into multiple applications, and each application does one thing and one thing really well. Now, containers are exactly the same thing. They do one thing and one thing really well. They have a well-defined interface. How do you talk to them? So I think there are a lot of similarities between microservices and containers, which gives the developer and the deployment the agility, the independence, the flexibility, the scalability, all the abilities we talk about. I think those are very relevant topics for the digital economy these days, and that's why all companies should really be paying attention to it. And in addition, it also helps you focus on the CI/CD and the DevOps aspect of it. So it helps you evolve the business anyway. So I think those are some of the key points.
What do you think is the right time for an organization to start thinking about leveraging microservices and containers?
Yeah, I mean, one of the key parts is, you know, microservices is not a free lunch, and it doesn't try to solve world hunger. It's not meant for everybody. So everybody needs to understand that. There are a lot of companies who are still building monolithic applications in a fantastic way and very successful, and that's okay. So microservices also does not try to solve your architectural problems. Typically, the way you build a monolithic application that has evolved over many, many years, you know, developers come and leave, you know, you tend to have a spaghetti code. So microservices will help you solve it if you start refactoring your monolithic into microservices by rewriting that code. And that's where the rewriting basically helps you get rid of the technical debt and helps you in a direction where you could be more effective. The typical approach, you know, and there are two ways people think about it. They pick an island project, you know, so they have like maybe 20 projects running at a given point of time. They're all using monolithic. They're going to pick an island project, which is hopefully least, you know, which doesn't have a significant impact on the business, and then say, here is a project where we're going to implement microservices. Look at, you know, how they can take an existing monolithic application. And my session will talk about how do you refactor it into microservices and start talking about those aspects of it. And then start leveraging it, you know, start leveraging, you know, CI/CD is important. DevOps is very critical for microservices. Start putting those policies, the factors, the infrastructure required to get it running in place for a small project with a small team. And once, you know, you have, you know, made your fingers wet, you know, once you have kind of gotten into the water, get a feel for it, then you start kind of expanding it to other teams. There's a lot of organic learning. So that's one approach that I've typically seen teams taking. The other one is of a big bang, which is definitely, you know, you need a corporate heavy investment in that, a buy up from the top down as opposed to bottom up. So there are a couple of different approaches I've seen teams taking.
Now, Arun, do you think that ESBs are really dead?
I'm not saying that really. You know, I mean, there are a lot of people, as I said, a lot of people who are really still heavily invested into ESBs. And microservices does bring, does do so in a right way. So, I'm not saying the future of ESB, the immediate future of ESB is dead really, but hopefully people will start realizing the importance of it. And traditionally, if you look at ESBs, they are heavily, you know, logic-centric. So if you look at a classical ESB, you know, either by one of those big heavyweight vendors like Oracle or IBM, those are heavyweight ESBs, a lot of logic in there, centralized persistence, governance, etc. That does make the whole thing very tricky and heavyweight. You know, you have to like really logged into that product effectively using bulky heavyweight SOAP protocols, for example. That does make the whole thing bulky. On the other hand, you know, I mean, I worked for Red Hat for a couple of years, but Red Hat has this lightweight ESB like JBoss Fuse. So that, I think, you know, is the right approach to go, where you say, hey, what all we care about is messaging, and we're going to build our own lightweight ESB based upon JBoss Fuse. We're going to use Camel, Karoff, and things like that, and leverage that. And that aligns very well with the microservices fundamentals as well of, you know, I'm going to have all the smartness of the business logic in the endpoint, not in the ESB, and my pipes are going to be dumb, which is what JBoss Fuse hopefully can provide you. So I think I'm hoping that ESBs over the period of next years or so will start evolving more into that pattern, and that would keep them relevant at least for some more time.
Oh, actually, the first thing I want to ask is, who do you think are the winners and losers, so to speak, when it comes to container technology, whether it's talking about VMware or another cloud-based solution or Docker?
I think it's too early to predict any winners or losers at this point of time. It's such an early stage, you know. I mean, if you think about it, the term has become more prominent for the last couple of years only. So it's really, really early to say who are the winners and the losers. But the technologies that are really getting mindshare at this point of time is Docker, definitely. You know, every time people talk about Docker, you know, talk about containers, they think, yeah, Docker is containers. That's the term that comes to their mind. So that I definitely see as one of the very strong trends. Then, you know, so Docker is from the single container perspective. Then you start talking about, oh, by the way, now I need to cluster these containers. And when I say container, typically people mean Docker. So then they start talking about Kubernetes, you know, which is the Docker clustering framework by Google. So that's the thing that comes to their mind. That's becoming very common as well. And I've seen, I know some production deployments of Kubernetes actually in real world. So that is pretty cool. Now VMware, you know, they made their fortune using virtualization technology, but it's okay, you know. I mean, if you want to do the development, like on a Mac or a Windows, you know, Docker is not supported natively. It's okay if you want to use a virtual machine for development purposes, but doing Docker containers on a virtual machine kind of defies that purpose. So what people do generally is, you know, on a hardware, they will run CentOS or CoreOS or RHEL Atomic Host, and that's where they'll run containers, and those operating systems natively support it. So I really don't know or see a role on how VMware would evolve to support containers. I've heard the term micro-virtualization, where they're working on how they can support tinier virtualization machines, you know, for supporting Docker containers. But that, to me, again, still defies the purpose. Why do I need a virtual machine if I want to go production? Development is okay, but production is kind of an issue for me. With a virtual machine, I'm adding a redundant layer right there itself. So I think it's still too early. OpenShift is definitely one of the platforms, and you may consider me biased, but because I've worked at Red Hat for a couple of years. But even as an outsider, you know, I've seen OpenShift gaining a lot of traction between developers because of their OpenShift V3, particularly taking Docker and Kubernetes to the very core and its heart on how they're going to make it successful. Even for the Couchbase customers, you know, we have heard that they seem to like OpenShift, for example, more than Cloud Foundry. So that's, I think it's all about mindshare at this point of time, as opposed to predicting winners and losers.
Now, I have kind of a, might seem like kind of a weird question, but I just was interested in your response to it. We've been talking a lot about development and leveraging new development technologies and testing, and I know that you're an avid runner, and I was wondering if you had any lessons or disciplines that you've learned from running that you think developers could apply to their development and testing processes today.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm one of the main, I've been running for many years, like 35 odd years now. I got into distance running for about 10 years. And that's about the time I actually took this role of developer advocacy. So in running, you know, I run long distance, like marathons or so. And I've done many marathons over the past 10 years. So when you're training for a run, you know, you apply lots of regimens that, running is a religion to me, really. I mean, you got to sleep early. You know, I need to sleep by 9:30 because I need 8 hours sleep, and I need to get up in the morning at 5 o'clock to go my long run. I can drink alcohol because that's going to dehydrate me. I can drink caffeine because that's going to dehydrate me. When I'm training for a long run, you know, in between a week, I need to have my interval runs. So I'm going to run, you know, 2 laps and half a lap slow, and then 2 laps fast, so on. Then I'm going to do my tempo runs, you know, which are like sustained pace for an hour and a half. So what I've done is I've sort of applied those philosophy to my programming as well, which is like, okay, you know, every Friday morning, and that's something I've started, you know, within our team now. Every Friday morning, we met it once so far, but we plan to do that on a regular basis. Every Friday morning, we're going to meet and we're going to do a tempo run together, guys. 2 hours focused running, you know, 10-minute warm-up, okay, what we're going to do, 10-minute cool-down kind of summary, and in between 2 hours of focused tempo run where we're going to look at, you know, okay, here is an aspect of Couchbase we're going to look at, why Couchbase is better than Mongo, for example, and things like that. So we'll start looking at those aspects. And then sometimes I do interval runs, you know, during my daily schedule that, all right, my next 20 minutes, I'm not going to check email, not going to check anything. I'm going to do a focused this thing here, and then I'm going to take a 10-minute break. And then I'm going to do 20 minutes this and 10 minutes break. In terms of religion, again, you know, I'm very religious about sleeping at 9:30. 10 o'clock is sort of gets late into my day. So being a well-rested person, you know, doing early in the morning with a fresh mind, you know, I've been able to do a lot more. Specifically, a lot of my team is in Europe. So that allows me to really you know, get up early in the morning and catch up with them a little bit. So I think there are a lot of principles from running that can really be applied towards coding and in general be a better developer.
Now, just on a final note, I was wondering that what you're interested in learning about new this year at Java 1.
Well, as I said, you know, in the very beginning, to me, Java 1 is a party, is a big party. And in general, I do not attend any talks because the talks are anyway made available. They are all recorded and you can figure out the solution. To me, it's all about meeting the people, and I'm all about people. I will be at Java 1 at all different parties. I like to hang out with people. I want to understand what are the problems that they're dealing with. That's what I'm most interested in hearing, so that, you know, if I have any experience or suggestion that I can help with, if I can help one person at Java 1, I consider my Java 1 to be useful.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for us here. I think that was a really enlightening discussion. Arun, thanks for joining us today. And this is Fred Churchville signing off.